Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sunup. The Daily Sunup podcast is a conversation with the Colorado Sun. See our trust indicators at coloradosun.com/ethics. It's Wednesday, April 24th. Today, the long-awaited bill overhauling Colorado's property tax system is set to be introduced in the legislature in the coming days. Colorado Sun political reporters Jesse Paul and Brian Eason got a sneak preview of what will be in it. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsor, Pinnacle Assurance, Colorado's leading provider of workers' compensation insurance. Pinnacle provides caring protection that Colorado businesses can rely on as they expand across the country. From finance to robotics and Arizona to Orlando, Pinnacle's nationwide coverage goes wherever Colorado businesses grow. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Colorado generally experiences low earthquake activity due to its distance from tectonic plate edges. However, the Denver series of earthquakes began in 1962, linked to activities at the Rocky Mountain Arsenal in Adams County. Originally a site for producing chemical weapons and testing toxic manufacturing processes, the arsenal began injecting toxic waste deep underground in 1961. This action lubricated geological fractures and triggered a series of earthquakes that lasted until the late 1960s. The most severe tremors occurred in 1967, damaging buildings and causing widespread concern. Although the Army stopped the waste injections in 1965, the geological effects persisted for years. Efforts to remove the waste, starting in 1968, continued to induce tremors. Before we continue, Next 50's vision is a world that values aging. By 2034, older adults will outnumber children for the first time ever. Next 50 funds innovative programs that combat age bias, advance digital equity, and make it possible to age where you want to live. Explore more at next50foundation.org. Next, our feature story.
Good morning, and welcome to the Daily Sunup podcast. I'm Brian Eason, joined on another Politics Wednesday with Jesse Paul. Hi, Jesse.
Hey.
So, we've been talking for months about this long-awaited property tax overhaul that was expected in the legislature this year. Democrats came into the session with this bipartisan tax commission that was supposed to put forward a plan, and we got a sneak peek of what's going to be in it. Break it down for us, Jesse.
Yeah, and so folks obviously probably remember Proposition HH on November ballot that failed, and this is kind of the result of that, right? Democrats went back to the drawing board. They formed this bipartisan property tax commission to try and come up with some results or some other solution, whether it be short-term or long-term. And Senator Chris Hansen, a Democrat from Denver, who's chair of the commission, sat down with us on Monday, kind of broke down what the broad strokes of the proposal are going to be. And again, this comes as we've got about 2 weeks left in the legislative session, so kind of pressure cooker time to try and get this thing through. So the big thing that you need to know, the main part of this that's going to affect homeowners in Colorado, is a $75,000 maximum exemption on someone's value from taxation. So it'll be 10% of a primary residence value that can be dropped, so up to $750,000 on a home, so $75,000 maximum exemption. So if your home is worth less than $750,000, you're going to get less than that $75,000. If your home is worth more than $750,000, you can only get that $75,000 exemption. And that translates to about a $450 annual savings on the average at $750,000 plus home. It's a maximum average. So in some parts of the state where mills are higher, the local tax rates, then you might be saving a little more. You might be saving a little less in different parts of the state, but that's kind of how we've averaged it out. And the other big thing to know about this is that it would bring down the commercial property tax rate, which is currently at 27.9%, and it would be a five-year ratcheting down to 25.5%. And that's a big deal because that is a multiple percentage point drop for businesses. They've long complained that their property taxes are too high in Colorado. They pay a much higher level than homeowners do. So that should have a pretty big effect. Harder to quantify that because it really depends on how much the property's value is, what the local mill levy rate is. Not as easy to do as that $75,000 maximum assessment or value exemption. And then there's some other provisions in this that are a little smaller but also important. It would basically tell local districts that aren't schools that if their property tax revenue is going to go up 5.5% or more in a given year, that they'd have to take a vote to do that increase. So that, you know, Metro District directors or the county commission, city council, things like that. Again, 5.5% is a pretty big increase. We saw much higher than that in the last assessment cycle, but that had to do with an unprecedented jump in home value. So 5.5% is probably going to contain that pretty well. It's hard to see that being exceeded a bunch of times. And then there's expansion of a deferral program that already exists, making it easier for folks to do that and giving them more leeway about how much they can defer. There's a change that would make it for people who don't pay their property taxes to the mortgage, able to kind of spread out their payments a little bit more. And then there's also a change that would basically split the assessment rate. Again, we talked about that with commercial properties, but the assessment rate's a big driver of determinant of how much you pay in taxes. And instead of saying that you just get this blanket rate, there's going to be separate rates now for schools and other local districts. And that's a way to kind of tweak things on the school side for the legislature, which affects state funding. It's quite complicated, but essentially this is a way to make sure that schools have enough money and then leave local districts kind of to their own devices to decide how much money they need. So those are kind of the broad strokes of what's going on here. Not a rate reduction for residential. That's kind of the big headline news, but that $75,000 maximum value exemption, they're calling it a primary residence homestead exemption. If you had a second or subsequent home, you wouldn't be able to claim it, is kind of the big headline news here. So, Brian, you've been covering this for a long time, especially paying attention to what's going on at the Property Tax Commission. How does this kind of fit into what the commission's been working on?
Yeah, it's interesting. So a lot of the pieces of this bill are things that did have bipartisan support, right? There was a lot of interest on the commission for doing a homestead exemption for people's primary residence, right? There was a lot of support on the commission for doing some of these, I'll call them kind of systemic changes in how we collect property taxes. So that's this idea of letting people pay in monthly installments instead of like once or twice a year in big lump sums. That's things like separating school and local property taxes. That's things like, I don't know if you mentioned this, but one way they're trying to avoid sticker shock in the future is by spreading out property tax increases over a period of time. So if your home value goes up 20%, you know, maybe you won't feel that whole 20% in 1 year. It'll be a little bit this year, a little bit next year, a little bit the year after that kind of thing. So there was a lot of bipartisan support for all of these pieces. But the commission doesn't actually have the ability to draft or propose legislation. A lot of the folks on it aren't state lawmakers. They're county commissioners, they're tax assessors, there's a representative from fire districts. And so there was never really an expectation that this group was going to put forward kind of a specific holistic proposal. And what that means is that, you know, you do have a lot of support for some of the individual pieces, but Democrats and Republicans still remain pretty far apart on the level of tax relief that folks want to provide. We've already had some conservative folks who are on the Property Tax Commission coming out and saying, you know, this is just Proposition HH all over again. It's not enough tax relief. There are conservative lawmakers who are on the commission who wanted to see bigger tax cuts than this. And there's also conservatives who are upset with some of the ways in which Democrats want to cover the cost of these tax breaks. And we'll talk about that in a second. But one thing that's interesting is that, you know, so there wasn't really bipartisan consensus on the level of tax relief to provide. And one thing that means is that we are going to see much larger tax breaks come before voters in November. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, is what Democrats have put forward enough to relieve some of that pressure that there is on folks to provide tax cuts? Or are we going to see kind of a big fight in November over or even larger tax cuts that have been put forward by conservative groups? So Jesse, when do we expect to see this bill, and kind of what are some of the loose ends that are still out there on this?
Right. So we got the preview this week on Monday, and then on Tuesday the bill was presented to the Property Tax Commission. We received a draft of it. It's kind of circulating now at the Capitol, but I think Senator Hansen doesn't expect to actually introduce it until next week. And you mentioned there's, you know, some loose ends, some questions. And one of the big ones, again, you talked about this too, is how do you pay for all this stuff, right? I mean, local governments and schools get affected by any reduction in property tax revenue. That's their main source of funding. Schools especially, that's the big one that Democrats kind of don't want to leave out to dry. And so Senator Hansen said, look, we are going to have to figure out a way to do this backfill, to do these reimbursements for the money that we're going to be lost. And it's probably going to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Depends on where all of those numbers kind of shake out at the end, and the devil's kind of in the details there. But that's a big question. And Brian, you've been covering this. Where do you think they're going to get that money from? I mean, there's only a set pool of money, set pool of funds or options that they have. We know that the general fund's tapped out, the budget's done. So where could the dollars come from?
The thing with the school piece of this is that the state really doesn't have much choice, right? Lawmakers in both parties have said, we are going to fully fund schools next year. I have not seen any indication that anyone is willing to go back on that promise. So what that means is, if we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars potentially in property tax cuts, that's hundreds of millions of dollars that the state legislature is going to have to come up with to make sure the school districts are still fully funded to the level that lawmakers have promised. I think there's really two key places you're going to see, I think, Democrats look to for money. One of them is the State Education Fund, which is an account that's funded by property taxes, funded by income taxes at the state level. It does have a large balance right now of over $1 billion. The problem is you can't kind of keep pulling hundreds of millions of dollars out from that every single year. Otherwise, we'll end up in the same situation we were during the Great Recession, when the state simply couldn't afford to fund K-12. The other place that they're going to look is something that they've done in the past, and that is tapping some of the revenue surplus under the Taxpayers' Bill of Rights. So state revenue, as many of y'all know, can only grow by the rate of inflation plus population every year. Any amount above that is known as the Tabor surplus, and that goes back to taxpayers. But lawmakers in the past have said, look, we consider property tax cuts to be a form of a tax refund, so we're going to take some of that money and reimburse schools and potentially local governments for those cuts. Now, I think one thing that is shifting at the Capitol is there's less and less support, I think, at the state level for backfilling local governments. They're trying going forward to say, local governments, you guys have to deal with this on your own. And schools, we're going to figure out how to take care of that at the state's end. Okay, so let's listen to what Senate President Steve Fenberg had to say when we put this question to him.
The issue has always been methyl, right? It is the more is the complicated part of the conversation. It's not very challenging to figure out how to turn the dials on how much relief to whom. The issue is, what do you do about schools and local districts that will be not made whole? And so the backfill conversation has always been, and I think will continue to be, the most challenging part of property tax discussion. All of the options are on the table. What I would say is the money is not endless.
So Jesse, is there enough time to get this done? How does this compare to previous sessions?
So the last several years of the Capitol have been kind of marked by this race to the finish on property tax legislation. And each year, the legislature kind of wraps up and everyone's unhappy, but they did something. And it's usually nibbling kind of around the edges. And they say, we'll deal with it again next year. This is meant to be a longer term fix. These cuts would be permanent. These changes would be permanent to the property tax system. But that being said, as I mentioned, there's 2 weeks left in the session, and we're not expecting this to come until next week. So that'll be about a week and a half. So is there enough time to get all this done, to have the debate that's necessary? Technically, yes. But realistically, I think Republicans are going to fight this tooth and nail. I'm already hearing grumbling from some Democrats that this isn't what they expected, that they're not happy with it. Big questions outlasting about where you get that money for the backfill or reimbursement. And then you've also got the governor. We don't know where he stands on this. And this is kind of a big thing for him. On top of all that stuff, you've got the November ballot that we mentioned and the measures that are on there kind of looming large and that reality. So there might be a circumstance or a universe where we get to May 8th, the last day of the legislative session, and this isn't done, or lawmakers decide to shelve it and just say, we're going to punt to next year and maybe we can't do anything this year. I think that constellation of possibilities is pretty low. But again, high stakes negotiations here at the end. It affects tons of people, millions of people across the state. A lot of hard feelings about this, a lot of opinions. It's why the thing hasn't been solved in the past or addressed. And it's going to be extremely tense, I think, at the Capitol, as it always is at the end of the session, but probably even more so with the very big weight of this property tax question just really on everybody's chest here in the last couple days.
Yeah, and I'm going to throw one more wrinkle at you, and that is the fact that there's a lot of push from Democrats, as well as Governor Jared Polis, to cut income taxes in some way. Polis wants an across-the-board tax cut. A lot of Democrats want tax credits for renters, and they want Tabor refunds to be distributed more equitably, flat refunds that would help the poor more than the wealthy, right? So there's a lot of unsolved questions going into the last 2 weeks, and it's gonna be rough. It's gonna be very busy. So thanks so much for joining me, Jesse, and we will talk to y'all soon once we figured out what else they're doing this year.
All right, thanks, Brian. Buckle up.
Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Water officials in Thornton are taking another run at a pipeline that would move water it owns out of the Poudre River in northern Colorado and south to the suburban Denver town. On Monday, Thornton asked Larimer County Commissioners to approve a building permit for its first segment of the pipeline. While the plan faces several opponents, developers urged approval of the redrawn 10-mile segment. They say their plans for affordable housing and other development important to the economic health of the Front Range have been stalled by Thornton's inability to access water it has long owned in the river. The highway that cuts across central Colorado remains closed because of bridge safety concerns. US 50 connects the communities of Gunnison and Montrose, and the closure has locals being creative in their ways to carry on with daily life. A group of students have had to use boats to get across the reservoir to attend school. Now, a dirt county road has been cleared of snow, but it has very limited access. Transportation officials are figuring out their next steps in repairing and reopening the bridge and haven't said how long they expect that to take. Ranchers in northern Colorado are calling on the state to kill two wolves reintroduced last year by Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Ranchers say at least 6 cows are dead and 4 wolves are involved, including 2 that have migrated from Wyoming. The state has a reimbursement plan for ranchers whose cattle are killed by wolves, but it does not have a process for reviewing how to handle wolves that kill the cattle. A Parks and Wildlife official said those plans are expected to be announced this summer. For more information on all of these stories, visit our website, coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again next time. Now, a quick message from our team.
Hi, I'm Tamara Chung, and I write about business and technology for the Colorado Sun. A large part of my beat is the Colorado economy and covering the ups and downs of losing a job, finding a job, running a business, all that fun stuff. You'll find coverage every Saturday in What's Working, and it's free because we feel all Coloradans need to know this stuff in order to stay better informed. You know, that's how we roll here, by the way. And that's why we'd appreciate your support to help keep the Colorado Sun sustainable. If you'd like to become a member, you can just go to coloradosun.com/join today. Thanks.